That's right. I'm Dr. Jeff Brown with Emerge Medical Podcast with my co-host, Dr. Jeff Cole. I'm absolutely delighted to have the guests we have today, Mother Goose with Dr. Ken Levy and Shelly Jones. I met Ken probably about 2 months ago now over a Zoom call, and I realized very quickly we are on the absolute same mission as Mother Goose. Mother Goose coordinates all aspects of patient care, including risk monitoring, intervention, network referrals, cross-continuum care management, patient resources. It integrates with your EHR. This is all for expecting mothers. And Ken, Shelly, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. We're looking forward to this conversation.
It is awesome. Give us kind of like the elevator pitch of what Mother Goose does, like in 5 minutes or less.
Sure, I'll start with that. So Mother Goose is a maternity care management platform. It's a unified maternity care management platform that brings the entire maternity care ecosystem into one highly tech-enabled hybrid space where there's also a high level of human touch. Mother Goose brings together the patient's obstetrical care team, links it back to the patient, our internal care management team of registered nurses and social workers, as well as the remainder of the maternity care ecosystem, including lactation consultants, mental health professionals, physical therapists, doulas, DME providers, and nutritionists. And we put it together in this really wonderful tech-enabled, easy-to-use space so that everybody's on the same page with what's going on with regard to a patient's care. What we do that's really important inside of the platform is we offer an understanding to both providers and to patients of risk, which is something super unique in the maternity care industry. And it's not just an understanding of baseline risk, it's an understanding of changing risk throughout the pregnancy. So we're able to detect both rising risk and falling risk. And what that does is it facilitates earlier interventions for problems that don't necessarily, that can be treated before they become an untreatable problem and lend themselves to a significantly adverse maternity outcome that's associated with incredible costs for those at risk for the cost of maternity care.
I saw some staggering metrics that showed how much it improved outcomes. I want to go through some of those with you guys because it's just, first of all, Mother Goose is a fantastic name for this.
Sure.
Like you just can't get better than Mother Goose for what this does. Walk us through some of those metrics about improved outcomes because I'm very interested in that.
Yeah, I'll share that with you. So the data, and so I'm, you know, just like you all, I'm a physician and a scientist, and I believe heavily in being able to prove what you do and make the proof of what you do clinically relevant and important to the stakeholders around the entire ecosystem.
Right.
So we went out, we started the company in January of 21. We went out to multiple beta markets, one of the four beta markets across the country in May of 2022 after a long run of significant development, and took us because pregnancies, as both know, pregnancies don't cook in a minute. They're not hip replacements. So it takes a little bit of time to get data from a pregnancy.
Right.
We were able to do a case control study going into Q3 of 2023. And we looked at 345 patients that had been delivered by the providers in our beta group. And inside of that case control study, all of the patients were matched in the two groups we looked at based on age, race and ethnicity, maternal comorbidities, and insurance participation status. And so we looked at two groups of patients. One was women who were users of the Mother Goose Health Platform, and the other group was women who were non-users of the Mother Goose Health Platform. And we looked at a single outcome variable to get started. We looked at preterm birth rates. And we found that the users of the Mother Goose platform had a 4.68% preterm birth rate. The non-users of the Mother Goose platform had an 8.76% preterm birth rate. And of course, I'm a scientist, so I'm looking at this really fantastic looking data, kind of side-eyed. So I had our data team go do a really super deep dive into the data. And one of the things we learned from diving more deeply into that data was that the demographics of the population that we studied inside of that case control study were an exact or very close match for the demographics of the birthing population of the United States. So we had 62% of the patients were non-white. 52% of the patients lived in socially high-risk zip codes, according to the CDC's Social Vulnerability Index. And 45% of the patients were Medicaid recipients. And in some states, Medicaid pays for 50%+ of the deliveries, but 45 to 50% is really where Medicaid kind of lives when it comes to deliveries across the country. So we were really excited by that data. And it gave us more energy to keep going and continue to do what we're doing. So we're definitely making an impact. Another piece of data that we were able to glean from the study, which wasn't really the primary endpoint, but the study demonstrated to us that users of the Mother Goose platform have a cesarean delivery rate that's 22% below the national average.
How do you explain the drop in preterm birth rates? Like, what are you attributing that to? Because that's a really, I mean, that's like almost 100% difference, right?
Yeah, it's a really significant difference. And there's a secret sauce that we like to share in pieces. But I don't think there's one factor. You know, we look at biomedical research all the time as physicians, and we like to look at a randomized controlled trial. And inside of that randomized controlled trial, we like to be able to isolate the one factor that made a difference or didn't make a difference in the clinical outcome. But preterm birth is a highly multifactorial outcome.
Right.
So it doesn't really rely on one factor, and there's certainly no one factor or one intervention you can put into place that's going to drive preterm birth. So our one intervention in this case is the Mother Goose Health platform, which supports mm-hmm. providers and patients throughout the pregnancy. I like to think of preterm birth as a highway, right? And each part of that highway has sort of a roadblock put into different places. So every time someone hits that roadblock, bam, preterm birth. Another roadblock, preterm birth. What Mother Goose does is help to navigate and avoid those roadblocks so someone can get to the end of the highway and have a full-term pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the secret sauce. You want the science behind it, in my opinion? Mm-hmm. The science, part of the science behind it is that there's a tremendous amount of literature supporting the correlation between psychosocial stress and biochemically measurable inflammation.
Hmm.
So insofar as having the 24/7 support, having access to education and having access to easy access to a mental health provider or to a nutritionist right on the Mother Goose mobile application or a lactation consultant, or not having the stress of having to give your provider a piece of paper and waiting 2 weeks to get your breast pump approved, rather ordering it right on the Mother Goose mobile application. Those are the kind of things that lend themselves towards mitigating stress in pregnancy and probably also mitigating biological inflammation in association.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. So it just sounds like maybe a series of earlier interventions, maybe small, that are additive along the travel.
Yeah, and I think that's the secret sauce to it, is looking at every part that can stand in the way of a patient getting to what they need and a provider being able to give them mm-hmm. what they need. And those things might be direct medical items, referrals, lab tests, etc., but they also might be SDOH items and psychosocial type items. For example, in the way Mother Goose may help a patient, may facilitate the ability for a patient to get to her missed appointments, or to ensure that some of those appointments, when they can, are done remotely. Those are the types of ways Mother Goose smooths over the ecosystem for both patients and providers.
So I'm an anesthesiologist, in case I didn't tell you that already. So from my perspective, I'm not an obstetrician, but it would make sense to me to have a remote monitoring platform where I could measure their blood pressure and their weight. Because, of course, what we see is we're always worried about preeclampsia as one of the biggest risk factors. And if you can identify that early on, significantly decrease morbidity and mortality for both the mother and the baby, right?
Yeah, Jeff, you're absolutely right. One of the pieces that is somewhat underappreciated is that there's good evidence in the literature to support the idea that blood pressures that are somewhat mildly abnormal in the middle of the second trimester can be predictive of preeclampsia or other PIH type spectrum problems later in pregnancy. And so the key then there becomes both identifying the patients early, which is something that Mother Goose does in the market better than anybody else, but also making sure that they have the tools early on to help identify those problems. And in this case, with regard to identification early of blood pressures, is it's a remote blood pressure monitor, which we offer to patients within 28 days of them registering for the platform. And the average patient registers for the platform at 9 weeks. So we hope by 12 or 13 weeks, patients are getting those blood pressure monitors so that they can start looking at the blood pressures early. We can develop a risk profile around that and share that risk profile with both the patient and the provider.
So I wanted to ask you directly, when we were in medical school, it's been probably 20, 25 years for some of us here, we didn't have this obesity epidemic that we do now. And there were obese people, but I got trained that hypertension in pregnancy is never normal, right? It's you're going to be worried about preeclampsia. So has that changed? I mean, are you seeing more hypertensive patients that at baseline, they're hypertensive before they were pregnant is what I'm saying. And how is that affecting their management?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it that hypertension in pregnancy is not a good, hypertension is not a good problem to have at the outset of a pregnancy. So hypertension management in pregnancy is complex when it comes to considering patients who are chronic hypertensive. So those patients actually, and interestingly enough, have their blood pressures not dropped to normal levels during pregnancy for what you and I would otherwise consider a normotensive patient. Actually, part of the goal in pregnancy is to maintain their blood pressures at a high enough level, because we know that regardless of what happens with those patients, they're going to have early onset of placental calcifications. And the key piece for them is maintaining blood flow to the placenta. And that can only be done with their pre-existing slightly higher blood pressures. That's sort of the short explanation of it. But yeah, I mean, with obesity, there's definitely going to be more women who are diagnosed with chronic hypertension. And in general, in the women's health space, we're glad there are a lot of people paying attention to cardiovascular disease and hypertension, especially as it relates to pregnancy, because it's been an understudied and an undertreated from a clinical standpoint problem for a very long time. And yeah, cardiovascular disease is the number one killer of women.
Yeah. Crazy.
When we did a podcast with another OB physician who ironically is launching a identity and cybersecurity company, he talked a lot about ferritin levels and having done some studies showing a real dramatic correlation to bad outcomes in pregnancy, and talked about patients from overseas that would have much higher ferritin levels than people in the U.S. Perhaps it's our diet. Also talked about how that's just not normal, normal lab work that we get in these patients. Does that strike a chord with you, or is there anything in your research that correlates with that?
Yeah, well, first of all, that's super interesting, because a number of our current clients have asked us to develop a pregnancy-associated iron deficiency anemia pathway for them, because they also see it as a big problem. One of the really cool things about the way we built Mother Goose Health is that when we start to pick up on these types of workflows and problems that are solvable, utilizing community partners such as a place for patients to go to get an iron infusion really quickly and easily, Mother Goose can create those workflows almost as a plug and play. It's super easy for us to create a brand new customized workflow, and that's part of the tech we've developed. And sure, IDA is definitely a big problem. It will be a problem in pregnancy, but you know, we haven't included iron deficiency anemia in our risk analytics right now, but as it grows, I'm sure we will, as it grows and the evidence is present, I'm sure we'll get to that.
You know, I wanted to ask one of you, what prevents your mom and pop shop OBGYN or even your big healthcare institution from doing what Mother Goose does? What barriers have you broken down to make this work where others have failed?
Yeah, I'm happy to answer that question. It's resources, right? Time and resources allocated to something of this nature inside of large health systems. Most of the time and attention go to large electronic health records. And there certainly have been some homegrown products that have come to market in maternity care. What's interesting, though, is most of those folks are now actually reaching out, and frankly, we are in conversation with a number of them that just can't dedicate the resources to or the level of expertise in this space, both on the clinical and the technical side, to develop the technology. So they're really looking more for partnerships than homegrown solutions at this point, just given time and expertise.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's exactly what Shelley said. And part of it is the difficulty in large, longstanding, otherwise highly effective academic medical centers to break down the data silos, break down workflows, and ensure that everything's working together in one space. Innovation is difficult in such places. Innovation's great in some places, because they're generally well funded, but innovation becomes difficult because they tend to be less nimble. And you don't have one person like you do at a very small startup saying, hey, this is how we're going to do this because this is the most effective way to do this both from a cost and outcome standpoint. And we're going to build this and we're going to do a 2-week sprint and it's going to get done. Mm-hmm. And so that's the benefit of working with a company like Mother Goose. If you're a large health system, it gets done fast and it gets done well.
It sounds like you're embedding various options for revenue, perhaps. I mean, like you mentioned, the breast pump thing. I mean, I can imagine there's dozens of opportunities to partner with solutions mm-hmm. and drive some revenue to the bottom line. Because quite honestly, as a startup, if you don't make revenue, if you don't have strong EBITDA, you're not going to make it. So I think that to have those solutions is fantastic. Plus, if it's in one app or one
right one-stop shop,
that yeah. you're really providing a service.
Yeah, 100%. And from the standpoint of how we look at revenue and how we consider the various revenue streams, we keep realizing as we continue to talk to more and more clients and get deeper in conversations and close contracts, that there are multiple pieces that will allow us to broaden those revenue streams. So yeah, we have one revenue stream is from the services that we provide, the platform, the people that come onto our platform to provide those services.
Who is your customer? Who's your client? Is it the institutions? Is it the patient? Walk us through that.
Yeah, it's the institution. The product is delivered not direct to consumer at this time, and we offer it free to patients on behalf of their provider or health plan. Mm-hmm. So the customer is either the platform partner, so a lactation consulting company, a mental health professional organization as a partner, or directly to obstetrical providers, health systems, and large health plans.
And so it seems like, where are you guys located with the company?
We're in New York City.
And you're just in New York?
Oh, no, we're actually currently in California, Illinois, Florida, and New York with additional deployments coming out in Tennessee, Georgia, New Mexico in the coming months.
And maybe it gets a little granular, but how do you take all those pieces of that puzzle in a local fashion and connect all those dots? Because I could see where the electronic and the data monitoring and all that could be done from anywhere on earth, but how do you get the lactation consultants and the mental health care providers and all those people that have to have in-office visits? How do you collaborate all of that?
So we actually use telehealth services and actually bring one of the great things about working in, for example, New Mexico, where there's extreme shortages of mental health providers and mental health providers that also treat substance use, because we have national partners who are able to work in that state, we're able to actually bring mental health to pregnant individuals in frontier spaces of New Mexico and really address access to care.
That's so awesome.
We do partner locally, but in cases where there is not access, we are able to address that through the platform directly.
And the what are there state issues still with telehealth? Like if you've got a provider in New York addressing someone in New Mexico, that kind of got eased a lot during COVID, am I right?
That got eased a lot during COVID, no question about it. And I'm sure you know this well, is that the state licensing compacts help out a lot, both from a nursing licensing and a medical licensing standpoint. There are still a couple of states outside of those compacts.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's awesome because you could bring the healthcare to the healthcare deserts, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of COVID, Ken, it sounds like you launched this about 10 months into COVID. Was it something that was on your brain and just never had time? And like a lot of people with COVID?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Yeah, it does go back. So it was around 27. I'll give you a little bit of the story here. So it was around 2017 where I first started to get interested in what was happening in the maternity outcomes data, sort of the data. I was looking at it and thinking, part of my background is that I have a master's in public health, and I'm always looking at sort of the bigger picture to see what's really happening from a trend standpoint. And obviously the trend in maternity outcomes has really never been great in the United States, at least for the last 20 plus years. So I started taking a look at that and realized that there were only two messages that you could get from doing a deep dive in the literature. One was that the cognizanti and those in charge, so to speak, were sold on the idea that, in quotes, that our healthcare system is broken. But that never really made sense to me because there were plenty of other verticals where the outcomes were flying high and doing really well because the proper resources had been put into them. And then the second message that the literature was providing to me was that, and this one I always thought was awful, was that this is the hospital's fault. Well, sure, if you just look at the data and understand that adverse outcomes at the end of a pregnancy occur in the hospital or immediately after discharge from the hospital, then it's really easy to say this is a hospital problem. But that doesn't, from an epidemiologic standpoint, that doesn't even really make sense. A woman gets antepartum pregnancy care for 7 or 8 months in the ambulatory setting and then goes to the hospital for 24 or 48 hours and may have an adverse outcome. How is that lead up to that the hospital's fault or problem? And you know, there's a team approach, but I will say that over the last 15 years, the hospitals have done an incredible job of shoring up the way obstetrical care is provided in an effort to minimize adverse outcomes. But you really can't change what you're given. So if you're given a patient who's sort of already on the edge of having a problem, there's little you can do to reverse that.
How many patients have you guys treated now? Total.
Yeah, so we have about 2,500 active users on the platform.
Well, so the next question then is, it's hard for us to have a podcast now where people don't talk about the data. I mean, it's just almost impossible now. I'm sure you're thinking about how you'll monetize that data going forward. And I want to hear your response to this, but I hope that you can ultimately answer the question to VBAC or not, because in 20 years of practice, it's swung back and forth and back. And I hate a VBAC. As an anesthesiologist, I hate a VBAC. So hopefully you can do it. So tell us about the data and what you plan to do with, because you'll have mountains of it in time, right?
Right. Yeah. And part of the plan for Mother Goose with data utilization and how we're considering the data is really to be the leader in understanding risk. And our ability to understand risk creates an environment where Mother Goose can not only advise partners on risk in certain populations, but Mother Goose can also then take on risk and become the manager of broad networks of obstetrical care providers. So the data is really important to us. And to answer your question, I'm gonna give my answer to the VBAC question, which is as nicely as I could say it, which is it's an individual choice, right? That needs to be made between an obstetrical care provider and the patient. There are multiple factors around, there are some obvious clinical no-nos to a VBAC, and then there are some situations where you'd encourage it, but it's certainly an individual choice. And while I'm on the subject of individual choice, it's another really great feature of the Mother Goose Health platform that we've built. We started off, and one of our earliest investors was a human-centered design studio. So we started off with all of the concepts around human-centered design. And one of those concepts in human-centered design and patient care is shared decision-making and ensuring that patients really understand what they're getting into and what are the risks and benefits and alternatives that we're all familiar with discussing. So as we continue to develop the platform, everything we do and every feature we develop is focused on that human-centered approach and ensuring that patients have equal information.
Love it.
When you mentioned 2,600 users, are those institutions or clients, not patients, or what does that number include?
Those are patients.
Okay. And the other thing that I there are times when I've learned what can be inside of Medicaid, what they'll actually pay for. There are some things I've heard that I just didn't know. Is there any money there to where you could directly go to Medicaid and get some funding?
Yeah, we actually are working directly with Medicaid MCOs and in some cases directly with the state Medicaid agency. There's certainly the way that Medicaid is paid by the state is they're paid a per member per month rate, and then they're on the hook for the cost of care. So if there's an opportunity for them to really both understand who's pregnant early enough in pregnancy to actually drive change and mitigate some of those adverse outcomes, so that a savings opportunity for just one preterm birth on average in Medicaid in the U.S. is $69,000 if we avoid one preterm birth. So there's certainly a ton of opportunity for return on investment for Medicaid MCO.
I wanted to know a little bit more about Shelly's background. We know Dr. Levy's.
Yeah, happy to share. So I actually spent the majority of my career in the Medicare space, working with large health systems, provider organizations, and health plans, really the beginning of the kind of move from fee-for-service to value-based care, really focusing on moving care out of institutional settings and tooling up the home as a side of care. And so that looked like anything from strategic partnerships with aligned goals and moving soft admits out of the emergency department and getting them into the home and supported, to actually doing acquisitions, jointly held home-based healthcare assets with large systems, to actually get directly convening with CMS as a convener in BPCI Model 2, and as well as BPCI Advanced in orthopedic and vascular surgery. Which is a very strange place to come from and land in maternity, but interestingly enough, in that journey, I did some work with a Medicaid MCO in the Southeast, and there was interest in really focusing on high-risk maternity, which is pretty far outside of the scope of what I had been doing. But we were looking at actually deploying nurses into the home and really started to learn what was happening in the maternity, with maternity outcomes in the U.S., and was both shocked and appalled that at the time I didn't feel like anyone was talking about it. And I saw a lot of the same issues with just highly, highly fragmented care and just poor coordination and poor support for both patients and providers, and wanted to use my experience and background to try to make change. And you found my way into another startup. I spent a couple of years there building out their health plan business and eventually running end-to-end sales and lead gen all the way through ongoing account management. It really just... didn't see the opportunity to do the work that I wanted to do, that I had done historically in partnership with providers, and really met Ken and learned what we were starting to build, and knew that this was really the recipe that was going to make change that I'd seen be effective in actually making broad scale change and outcomes. But you can't do that without really supporting both patients and providers at the same time.
Absolutely. It's pretty clear. It's easy to me, and I'm sure you too, Jeff Cole, to see the business model and how this could make money and also help patients. I worked in two big city hospitals, like the county hospital, and it's staggering to me how many people don't get care when they're pregnant. And I don't know why that is. I hope that Mother Goose can be a part of fixing that. But I've seen so many people, so many patients come in and they're in labor and they haven't even seen a doctor. And it just blows my mind. And some of them don't do well, right?
Yeah.
I saw Siamese twins come out one time and nobody knew they were coming. And it was one of the most dramatic things I've ever seen. That lack of pursuit of care is a real issue. How do you see Mother Goose solving for that?
Yeah, it's amazing that in this in this sort of day and age that we even have to ask that question.
Yeah.
The tools we have for accessing patients, educating patients, getting them into prenatal care are still incredibly fragmented and generally not effective. And what Mother Goose has as part of its mission, knowing well the data that everybody's aware of, is that inadequate, definably inadequate prenatal care has a direct correlation with adverse maternity and neonatal outcomes.
No question.
So, Mother Goose utilizes a number of mechanisms, both proprietary and obviously and some not proprietary, that allow us to both identify patients earlier than anyone else, as well as connect with them, engage them, and sometimes coordinate their way into obstetrical care before they even have an obstetrical care provider.
What are your communication tools? Because I've seen data where texting is way higher than email. And do you have a combination of app or website or secure texting? How does all that work?
Yep. So this is the I like to say the best that's available in multi-channel communication. So texting, mobile application pushes, direct phone calls from our care team, emails, proactive, what we term in-house proactive chat, where we're reaching out to a patient or a user with a provocation, to get them to talk to us about a problem. So all of those means and mechanisms are really important to us, and it's all with an eye out towards engagement.
And you've got some artificial intelligence platforms incorporated into your platform.
Yeah, it's kind of streams throughout the platform in a number of different ways. So, AI, machine learning, natural language processing are tools that we utilize to better project our human-centered design approach when it comes to engagement. So in all parts of the platform, from the back end of data analytics to the front end of risk communication, and where we would be communicating risk to both providers and patients, to direct communication both with providers and patients. All of those tech tools are at our disposal, and we've utilized them judiciously.
When you go to an MCO, say it's Medicaid or whatever it is, how does a revenue structure work? Are you sharing cost reduction? Are you charging a monthly fee to the members, or is it a mix, or what?
Yeah, there's a mix, and it is really based on the total membership. And we also say we have some structures where we are willing to take some risk on our ability to produce outcomes on patient populations as well.
Mm. Win-win.
Yes.
This is probably a good time to segue into the business side of it. If you guys want to talk about revenue run rate, I know you're in a fundraise. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So briefly, and from a high level standpoint, Mother Goose has revenue, but largely we're the big revenue. And while we continue to develop our sales pipeline, we are projecting that there's going to be a significant, because we know where the contract closures are, where the red lines are coming back, and what the timeline is around significant health system, Medicaid MCO, commercial health plan deployments. We know what that looks like for Q4 and going forward into early Q1 of 25. There will be a significant rate of revenue increase.
So now I think it's a good time we talk about the business aspect of Mother Goose to get a little more detail. I know you guys are in the middle of a fundraise. You want to walk us through that?
Yeah, so absolutely. Sort of at a high level around that, we're in our second round of a raise. Our first round was a pre-seed round that we raised on a safe note with a $5 million valuation cap. We raised $500,000 from a single institutional investor plus friends and family, put in about $250,000 of our own money. We're currently in a seed raise plan for $3 million. It's on a safe note with a $12 million cap with some MFN terms and discounts for at a certain investment level. But what we've really done that's been interesting with the current raise is that we continue to raise from individual investors and KOLs that are actively contributing to the company. So what we did with this raise in that vein is we started to form what we're calling an angel advisory board. So while we had a tremendous amount of investment interest from individuals, we wanted to make sure that we brought individuals into the company who had something to contribute to the company, whether it was from a straight business standpoint, an understanding of the healthcare system, connectivity into potential clients, some clinical acumen or some data understanding or tech understanding, anyone that was in an adjacent to our company. We really wanted to be on that angel advisory board. And so we raised a good bit of money from folks who are now on our angel advisory board, as well as two additional institutional investors in the current round.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's analogous to what we're doing at Merge Medical as far as putting together a group of subject matter experts among various medical subspecialties and topics. And I'd love to see if there's, you know, ways that we can, you know, kind of work together, meld that together as we go forward.
Yeah, I'd love to dig into that with both of you.
Yeah.
How are you marketing this?
So we're being very targeted in our approach and really looking at going deep in markets rather than just kind of spraying the country. So we've targeted a handful of markets where we have, relationships that we're closing contracts on and continue to develop with both primarily Medicaid and some commercial plans, but primarily Medicaid plans, as well as physician organizations and health systems. Interesting, there's already some physicians that are interested in moving more into that value-based care space and see an opportunity to really actually save some cost in getting rid of some of the kind of single solution products that they have in place today for just maybe remote monitoring or digital education, by getting rid of those and having a more comprehensive solution like Mother Goose. They're really tooling up and both saving cost as well as putting themselves in a position to drive revenue and pay for performance contracting and value-based care as well.
Are there any substantial national networks of OBGYNs, clinically integrated networks, ACOs, collaboratives, whatever you want to call it? Do those exist?
They do. I would say there are large organizations of obstetric groups across the country. What I would say with ACOs and clinically integrated networks, they tend to have obstetrics as a part of what they deliver, but it's not typically obstetrics standing alone inside of a IPA or a clinically integrated network. However, there's certainly interest in that space and continuing to move the needle in improved outcomes. And frankly, there hasn't been a lot of opportunity in the past where we're seeing a lot more interest and movement now, both in the part of the plans as well as the providers.
Shelley, do you have competitors or any competitors of significance anyway?
We do. What we like to say, there's a lot of noise in the space, right? And there's a lot of line item competitors. But as far as anyone who actually does exactly what Mother Goose does in one solution, not really. But there are certainly folks out there that provide remote monitoring in pregnancy or digital education. What we do see a lot of, which we is not the way we see things improving in maternal health, is a lot of solutions that are actually moving care outside of the obstetrical practice by having maternity, virtual maternity care services, or providing some small part of that journey. And frankly, we see that as detrimental to care when you start pulling care out of the OB's office and not really improving the care and coordination between the patient and the obstetrical provider.
So that level of fragmentation that Shelley's describing has been unfortunately endemic for a number of years as multiple single point solutions have come onto the market and have been, you know, somewhat well funded by, you know, and backed by significant amounts of money. Part of what we learned very early on at Mother Goose when we really just before we started the company and we're figuring out what to do with this maternal health outcomes problem was we went and spoke to and had great conversations with almost 100 physicians and patients. And what we learned from those groups was that they were projecting two problems commonly. One was that both groups felt that the maternity care ecosystem was incredibly fragmented, just mm-hmm. exactly what Shelley's describing. Mm-hmm. And the other was that the maternity care ecosystem is generally unsupportive of what they're trying to do. So we've built the platform to solve both problems. And every time we see a solution that's out there that looks like fragmentation,
yes,
we realize we've either done one of two things. We've either developed a solution in-house to that fragmentation, or we've built the platform and structured it in such a way that we're easily able to link up with that fragmented solution and bring them into our ecosystem.
This is analogous to what's happening in direct primary care models, because people are saying, you know, part of what's wrong with medicine is that it's episodic acute care. And I can see where it's been pushed that way even in obstetrics, but now you guys are taking it. It's not an episodic care. It's from the time you know you're pregnant till after the delivery and onwards, right? Makes sense.
So part of the build and part of the thinking or the new thinking is we can't be reactive in medicine. Right? We have to be proactive. We have to start to understand the entire picture and the holistic view of an individual patient's health story before a problem develops. And, you know, from an epidemiology standpoint, you think of this, you know, sort of this classic look of, you know, when does disease start to develop? Disease starts to develop long before we see clinical manifestations of that disease. So the question then becomes, how can a company like Mother Goose start to detect a rising risk before it becomes a problem and intervene to prevent it from becoming a real problem?
I would also add that a lot of what we see on the market is either basically a medical practice with some telehealth or digital service, or we have things that are tech only. It's not well married. And so a lot of the tech-based solutions in maternity care, they don't get good engagement, right? We had a health plan share with us. We spent millions of dollars and they helped tens of our members, right? So patients aren't really willing to engage and build up. There's no way to really build a relationship inside of a tech only platform without that human element. So Mother Goose really is very different from our competitors in that we really balance both the technology as well as that human support and build relationships with our users from the very, very early in pregnancy all the way until their baby's first birthday.
That's awesome.
You can't just do that with tech only.
And walk me through, like, I hear you're doing the remote blood pressure, the weight and so forth. I don't imagine a lot of patients would watch the video, but a lot of obstetricians would watch this. So one of you guys walk us through, okay, here's day one. My MCO has a relationship with Mother Goose. I'm pregnant. And walk me through that process of, from a patient's perspective, what this does.
Shelley, do you want to take
that? Yeah, I'm happy to take that. Okay. Yeah. So as soon as the patient schedules their first obstetrical visit, Mother Goose knows they're pregnant. So we begin doing outreach. So the provider doesn't actually have to do anything. We have a bi-directional integration with the electronic health record and begin that onboarding process and building a relationship with that patient, prepping them for their upcoming visit. they download the platform and they immediately have access to our care managers through in-app chat, phone, email, even video visits are available inside of the platform. And because we understand through the electronic health record, their ICD-10 diagnosis information, understand through the assessments of risk that we are conducting with information from them as well as from various sources, we our platform is responsive and is able to actually adapt and create a customized journey for them based on their provider, their specific clinical and risk profile, and begin to support them from day one. And not only that, because we have this ongoing bi-directional feed, as risk changes, our platform is responsive and all of our evidence-based care pathways are tied to specific risks and changing risks, whether that be SDOH or clinically related throughout the pregnancy and postpartum period. So we continue to work both with their provider and with them through pregnancy and birth of their baby and supporting getting mental health support, lactation support. They can order their breast pump, get nutritional support and services directly through the platform. And we're streamlining orders processing as well for the provider. So it isn't a cumbersome process for anyone involved.
Sounds like mental health, you're connecting to a network through a telehealth network that you coordinate. What about your care coordinators and nurses and the your hired boots on the ground? What percentage do you see in a mature company? You know, how many per thousand members would you have supporting that those clients?
Yeah, that number is certainly going to vary based on the acuity of the population. So we have our care management team, which sort of exists in pods of registered nurses and social workers, assigned to, they're actually assigned per physician. And then we estimate the number of expected active pregnant patients at any one given time. But then we modify that number based on the expected rates of patient contact that we've learned over the last 3 years and develop that into a way for to have the right number of care managers assigned to a given physician in a given practice or in a given obstetrical care provider. So it goes anywhere between kind of a low number of 250 users per or patients per care manager to 2,000. And a lot of what we've done from a scalability standpoint continues to develop. And as we learn what we don't have to have human touch for, but can still maintain engagement, that's where we then go ahead and implement AI and machine learning. And okay, patients are still engaging with these pieces of the platform. We can pull the human beings out of it for this part. But at the end of almost every workflow, there's a fail safe that goes back to a human being. Right? Yep. If it's not working out electronically and there's a problem, we have a way to close that loop and pull it back to a human being, so patients aren't like getting dropped into this like electronic dumpster fire. There's always a place for them to get in touch with a human being inside of Mother Goose.
That's my next question, Ken. Let's elaborate. Let's pause for a second, because this is a key issue for a lot of technological companies that are coming to market. Everybody from Tesla to you guys, who's ultimately responsible for what the AI is doing? And what I'm hearing, and I want you to confirm this, is it's the clinician. The clinician ultimately has control and AI is supporting the clinician. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and I think that's at least the paradigm now. And I think that's going to be the paradigm going forward, is that we in medicine in general, and as leaders in developing technology that's going to be integrated into, you know, certainly a maternity care episode in our case, but in other cases, you know, many other areas of healthcare, we need to understand that the ultimate responsibility and decision making has to be human physician to or human obstetric or human care provider to human being patient, and that AI can be incredibly supportive. It can help us scale. It can help us iterate workflows. It can help things move faster. But it can't, at least now, can't be a replacement for that ultimate human contact that we need.
Right.
And for that human contact, is your, when you're looking to hire those employees, are you looking nationally?
So ideally what we really try to do is in a given market, try to have someone local who knows the market, who knows the physicians, who knows the hospitals, who knows the language, who can speak to patients. But as you might imagine, there's no shortage of really highly qualified obstetrical RNs who've spent many years in the ambulatory setting or the inpatient obstetric setting, who would love to work from home and get paid essentially the same they're getting paid to go into the hospital every day.
And connect all the dots.
Right.
Yeah. Do you have patents, proprietary stuff around this that protects it?
We have proprietary algorithms that have not been patented as of yet.
Gotcha. But not publicly available.
No.
Right. We're getting close to about an hour in. Is there other things that you guys like to talk about, things that we've missed? I love what you're doing. I mean, this is one of the best things we've showcased here. This has been great.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we've really worked hard to be thoughtful about what we're doing here.
And, yeah, I can feel it.
And really thoughtful about not putting something out there that doesn't work.
Right.
We really want to have, I have this back end philosophy about MVP in healthcare, that, MVP in healthcare is like, doing half a surgery and saying you'll do the other half later when you figure it out.
Right.
You can't do that. You have to put out a well-developed product that actually works.
When you described the physician interfacing, it sounded like that was through his or her EMR. When the patient is interfacing, are they interfacing more likely through an app or what's that?
The patient interface is a mobile application. We succeeded highly in not adding to the physician's workflow or work burden. We've actually decreased the physician work. And so the physicians interact with us in some EMRs through their regular EMR workflow when it comes to orders and seeing results and seeing documents. Others, we use the FHIR, F-H-I-R functionality, where they have to do a click to get to the Mother Goose user interface inside of their EMR, and then they could see everything that happens with Mother Goose. So, we've been incredibly conscientious about that from the beginning. And my background is that I own the largest privately held women's healthcare practice in New York City called Maiden Lane Medical, and that's been a focus of mine for 15 years now, is how do we make the work easier for the doctors? Mm-hmm. And that, of course, improves the whole physician work there.
Yeah, I think thinking about all of this, because I'm an orthopedic surgeon, we're very episodic in what we do. But, diabetes is hard, hypertension's hard, but in obstetrics, you've got this hard thing where there are lots of bad outcomes, but it's a 9-month journey or shorter. And there's just so many different places where, lack of communication, lack of involvement, there seem to be so many opportunities to make a difference. And so I think combining the boots on the ground, whether they're remote, with technology and a comprehensive solution, it just seems like there's a lot of potential to bring good.
Yeah. And what we've done in that vein of defragmentation is not only are we bringing sort of the obvious high level parts of the ecosystem together in one place, what we're also doing is managing each part of the minutiae of those processes. So for example, if you're an obstetrical care provider and you want to refer your patient to a mental health professional, if you're looking at the Mother Goose FHIR UI inside of your, Epic or eClinicalWorks EMR, for example, you click a single button that says Mother Goose mental health referral. That referral order comes on to Mother Goose. Mother Goose starts surfacing that information to the patient, gives the patient the opportunity to schedule an appointment with one of our partners right on our platform, get all the information, do the televisit. And because we have all of those pieces of that appointment journey integrated inside of our system, we also know the KPIs that go along with them. Mm-hmm. So we know when a user hasn't made that appointment. We know when the patient hasn't showed up, didn't show up for the appointment. We know when the appointment's been completed, we get the note back from the provider. We provide that note right back to the obstetrical care provider. We're able to follow each piece of the of that and make sure that the follow-ups are occurring at the right cadence. So, and that goes across the full, that's our philosophy for all of our workflows is, okay, what are the small pieces of it? And how do we make sure those don't fall through the cracks? And it's done in a very scalable way so that we don't have to hire additional human beings to watch that, which is part of the problem in large medical centers, because they don't have that, those little tiny pieces all squared away with the process.
Mm-hmm. In that vein, in a litigious society, do you have, it sounds as if you would have everything very well documented as far as, okay, here's a problem. Here's the contact we made. Here's the efforts made. It sounds like that's bringing protections to people inside that care loop.
Yeah, and there's no question about it that the documentation that we provide back up to the obstetrical care providers has the ability to protect them in certain situations, especially if a patient's coming and saying, "You never told me that," or "I never heard about that." Well, Mother Goose probably reached out to you with a message to discuss that very issue, because we've got a ton of them. And so you did hear about it. We documented it. We sent that documentation right back to the obstetrical care provider.
Seemed like that would lower malpractice premiums.
Yeah. And that's an interesting other avenue that we've sort of explored a little bit, which is how to sell this to both, insurance companies or health insurance, medical malpractice insurance companies, as well as at an even higher level, reinsurers. It's always that opportunity to have conversations with people who think about the problem in a very similar way that we do, which ultimately comes down to risk mitigation.
Yeah.
Like the whole, when you first learn you're pregnant to the time, you know, you have the baby, and thereafter, it's all about, you know, how do you identify risk and mitigate that risk in every piece of it, whether there's SDOH type risk or financial risk or direct medical risk. How do we mitigate that risk and smooth over that journey? And thus every stakeholder in the maternity care ecosystem wins when we do that together.
For sure. That's very exciting.
There's your sound bite, by the way.
That's right.
Think in some of the shared decision-making tools that we have inside of the platform around birthing plans and other areas where there's documented shared decision-making would probably be beneficial as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe helpful to talk a little bit more about our ecosystem and how we think about creating this ecosystem of support. We certainly look at our ecosystem of support of lactation consultants, mental health professionals, and we want to have national partnerships, and we do, right, to cover those areas that maybe we can't get someone in timely because there isn't coverage. But one of the things that we understand very well is what we do well, and that's what we're sticking to, right? We have a technology that brings together our clinical care team with obstetrical clinical care teams and patients. And so we really want to bring together what already exists in the ecosystem today. We're not going to hire our own lactation consultants. We're not hiring our own mental health professionals. We're really looking to bring together the existing infrastructure in markets and get better engagement and utilization of the tools that exist today, rather than trying to go out as some others are doing in the market, right, and hiring their own doulas, their own creating their own DME companies, their own lactation companies. We just don't view that as a scalable path. We knew that we work with organizations that have proven themselves in the market and their ability to really scale with us quickly because they have existing contracts.
Exactly. And that's the one thing I like about a platform. You know, you've built the platform, you've put the cost of goods in, and now you scale it with the existing infrastructure and just connect the dots. And I absolutely love this. Every podcast that I source, and Dr. Cole does as well, we try to make sure they do three things. They help patients, they help physicians, and at least have the potential to enrich us financially, you know, through investing. And you guys checkmark all the boxes. If I could summarize, you correct me where I'm wrong. Mother Goose is the best named virtual maternity care service platform, significantly improving patient care and reducing cost. Is that accurate in a nutshell?
It is.
That is awesome. Well, guys, thanks for joining us. Dr. Jeff Brown, the Merge Medical Podcast with Mother Goose. Dr. Ken Levy, Shelley Jones, and my co-host, Dr. Jeff Cole.